Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1113. The Chinese winter. Weaponized media, social media, and the coronavirus biowarfare psyop. This is being recorded on February 13th of the year 2020. There is a lot to discuss. This will certainly go on another week, at least one more program, maybe two. On the other hand, there is so much going on. Russia may be involved in, there may be another hot war breaking out in the Middle East. Russia and Syria are squaring off against Turkey. I think ultimately one part of the goal to destroy China and Russia is a renovated Ottoman Empire with the Uyghurs in Xinjiang province and various Russian Caucasian peoples united in a neo-Ottoman Empire intended to occupy the middle part of the Earth Island and to block China's Belt and Road Initiative and to basically cut off the petroleum-generating elements of the fossil fuels elements of Russia or areas of Russia. That, again, I think a long-term pan-Turkist slash neo-Ottoman Empire as part, as a goal dominated, by the way, by the Muslim Brotherhood and their Ibn Khaldun free market economic philosophy. I think that Islamist slash neoliberal slash pan-Turkist entity, a neo-Ottoman Empire, is, may very well be part of the goal to chop up Russia, chop up China, and block the Belt and Road Initiative of China. We're going to resume where we left off in For the Record 1112. Now, the context here is the not only the economic damage that the coronavirus, which I suspect is being deliberately spread, I think this may very well be biowarfare, but beyond that, a combination, really hybrid warfare, a combination of media warfare, online slash social media warfare along the lines of the Arab Spring. That's why I call this the Chinese winter. And, of course, what I believe is the spreading of the coronavirus. It is a matter of record, and I read that into the record in For the Record 1111, that just such a coronavirus, a bat-specific coronavirus, a synthetic one, was synthesized in a U.S. laboratory. As it published in November of 2008, whether that is the same virus or a related virus remains to be seen. I suspect it would be related, not the same, but who knows. By the way, that link is now back up. It had been broken. Maybe that was just computer weirdness, or perhaps there were some changes. I don't know. Computer weirdness would be the most probable explanation. In addition to the online consideration, some of the, I think, weaponized journalistic coverage, and we'll get into that, including all the repetitive drumfire information about all of the economic damage this is doing to the U.S. and the global economy, a drumfire which has continued, and which, up to a point, is real. We should note that in addition to the capability of online and social media, to online technology and social media technology, mobile technology, to sow panic and dissatisfaction, the markets themselves are deeply susceptible to manipulation and panic. In fact, in the 19th century, when equities markets, when Wall Street would collapse, it was called a panic. Then they called that a depression. Now we call it a recession. But the panicking, so to speak, of capital markets, of equities markets, is something to take into account here. Certainly, the Chinese economy and the linked global economies are suffering. Something, by the way, Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross has gloated about. I think one should, we're going to recap the last 12 or 13 minutes, for the record 11-12, by way of pivoting toward once again, reviewing Steve Bannon's central position in what the New York Times termed the new Red Scare reshaping Washington. And it has, note that as we discussed in For the Record 11-11 and 11-12, Steve Bannon is tied not only to a guy named Guo Wangwi, an exiled Chinese billionaire who was attacking the regime, but also to a guy named Jay Kyle Bass, a Dallas-based hedge fund manager who made his fortune speculating prior to the collapse of the housing market in 2008. He has been betting against both the Hong Kong and Chinese economies, and he in turn is closely allied with a guy named Tommy Hicks, who is a mover and shaker in the Trump administration, not actually a member of the administration, but the co-chairman of the Republican National Committee, but someone who has access, including access to national security matters. He has been networked with people like Wilbur Ross, the Commerce Department, CIA, and others, with regard to the Chinese, quote, threat, unquote, and in particular, with regard to blocking, the Chinese electronics giant Huawei, in regard to the 5G initiative. I would note that Tommy Hicks is not only close to J. Kyle Bass, but appears to be a co-investor with J. Kyle Bass. They've been investing together since 2011, and he did not deny the ProPublica inquiry about whether or not he was investing with J. Kyle Bass in the latter's bets that the Chinese economy would tank, but he broke the conversation off. We're going to review now the last 12 or 13 minutes of For the Record program number 11-12 that I recorded last Friday. That was, I believe, Friday, February 7th. Now, I'm going to run through a whole lot of articles, and I'll put some links on in the written description for this show of the effects on the global and Chinese economy of this are not only massive, but frankly come somewhat suspicious. A rare note of sanity. I'm going to talk about the weaponized media. Oh my God, you know, virus can be transmitted even before you have symptoms. Yeah, well, so can the common cold, so can an awful lot of upper respiratory infections. And again, there have been roughly 13 times as many Americans killed of the flu so far as by this virus in a country roughly five times the size. Op-ed column from today's New York Times, Friday, February 7th of 2020, a rare note of sanity and calm in the New York Times. Who says visiting China isn't safe? New York by Rosie Spinks, a global tourism reporter for Skift. Among the interests that are tanking or certainly being negatively affected by this, the tourism industry and airlines. And now, as you listen to these, think about the fact that Robert Mercer runs the most successful hedge fund in the world, uses AIs to predict trends, has a 70% return on their investments at Renaissance Technologies. And bear in mind, he's tied to Steve Bannon, who's tied to Guo Wangwi, and the J. Kyle Bass, who's tied to Tommy Hicks. One wonders what Robert Mercer may make of this, and has there been any interplay between Robert Mercer and J. Kyle Bass, both very close to Steve Bannon. From, again, Who Says Visiting China Isn't Safe? Talks about why it just does not make good sense to quarantine China. The United States State Department nevertheless is denying entry to foreigners who have recently been in China and is screening Americans who arrive home from China, as well as asking them to self-quarantine for 14 days. It has told Americans not to visit the country at all. British Airways, Lufthansa, and all three major American carriers have halted all flights to China, while the cruise line Royal Caribbean is denying boarding to any person who has traveled to, from, or through China or Hong Kong in the past 15 days. And the column goes on to talk about why this just doesn't make a lot of sense. But again, consider the following in terms of short selling, making money off of various investments that would tank because of this virus. And Kyle Bass and Steve Bannon and the genius of Guo Wenwei are spreading disinformation. New York Times, Saturday, February 1st, Nathaniel Corkery and Annie Carney declaring health emergency, U.S. restricts travel from China, skipping down. 3 weeks after the first China-related deaths were reported, beginning again, 3 weeks after the first virus-related death was reported, China has found itself increasingly cut off from its biggest trading partner, the United States, and many other nations. Note the following. Again, New York Times, Wednesday, January 29th. Governments expand restrictions on travel to China as cases spike. Again, examine travel business, airlines. Is there any short selling? Might Robert Mercer be involved? Might J. Kyle Bass be involved or others? Skipping down in this article by Paul Moser. With China's Lunar New Year holiday nearing its end, companies ordered workers to stay home and avoid travel. The economic impact of such measures pointed to a deeper political crisis, with many people accusing the Chinese authorities online of failing to act quickly to contain the virus, even as the government continues to struggle to control its spread. One of the things we'll talk about, I mentioned it in the first show, it would be easy to spread viruses around like this. Any number of people, Uyghurs, Spec Op Poops, members of Falun Gong, you name it. And skipping down, businesses that operate in China have issued warnings of their own. In the flurry of emails sent in recent days, General Motors, Honeywell, Bloomberg, Facebook, and other companies have warned employees not to travel within mainland China. And skipping down again, investors in Asia were gripped on Tuesday with fear about the health of the global economy for a second day, with a widespread sell-off continuing in the markets. Investors dumped stocks in companies thought to be most vulnerable to the effects of the virus. Quote, "The coronavirus is the number one threat to financial markets currently, as global investors are becoming jittery on the uncertainty," unquote, said Nigel Green, founder of an investment company, the De Vere Group. New York Times again, this from Thursday, February 4th, the business section, front page by Stanley Reed. OPEC scrambles to react as virus imperils demand. You shorted oil stocks, you can make a lot of money. By the way, on the morning of November 22nd, 1963, there was tremendous shorting as the market collapsed. The same thing happened on September 11th. I've covered that in numerous shows. But if you knew this was going to happen in advance, say, just, you know, Robert Mercer, J. Kyle Bass, who knows? Think of what you do. OPEC scrambles to react as virus imperils demand. Oil prices are plunging. That also, by the way, will hurt Russia and Iran, both targets of U.S. destabilization. China consumes something like 13 of every 40 barrels of oil that are used every day or every week. I'm not sure, but a large percentage of petroleum consumption is in China. One more time. From the New York Times of Friday, January 24th of 2020 by Alexandra Stevenson. China reels from virus and markets are on edge. Boy, are they ever. And from the first business page, as China reels from deadly virus, the global economy may be at risk. Well, that is what they need. Again, not only the Chinese economy tanks, but J. Kyle Bass, appears to be able to benefit. Who knows about Mr. Hicks? And remember that J. Kyle Bass tied to Steve Bannon, tied to Robert Mercer, who uses AIs to predict investment trends and makes a lot of money. New York Times of Wednesday, February 5th of 2020. Virus threatens an oil industry that's already ailing, with a decline in China's demand, sending crude prices lower, cutbacks by American companies may be ahead. For now, drivers are benefiting. That will help Donald Trump at the polls. Yay, we got cheaper gas. Vroom, vroom. Oh, hey, America's great. I'm going to vote for Trump. Terrific. And bear in mind that falling oil prices will hurt Iran and Russia. And if someone knew, just hypothetically, if someone knew in advance that this was going to happen, short selling would be a great way to make money. That same page, page B1 of the business section of the New York Times, Wednesday, February 5th, this past Wednesday, outbreak tests supply chains of automakers by Jack Ewing, Neil E. Boudet, and Geneva Adler. Oil, automobile manufacturers' supply chains are also something that is very much in play here. Wilbur Ross, Commerce Secretary, and this was actually noted by Paul Krugman. I'll include that. I haven't got the article with me in the written description for the show. He said, well, it may be too early to take a victory lap, but now maybe various companies whose supply chains involve Chinese manufacturing will move to the U.S., New York Times, Saturday, February 1st of 2020. Continuing from the front page, virus spurs U.S. to curb air travel from China. On Wednesday, the J.P. Morgan Chase economists cut their forecast for Chinese economic growth sharply for the first quarter to incorporate the impact of the virus. They now expect that the Chinese economy will grow at an annualized rate of 4.9% in the first quarter, down from the 6.3% they previously forecast. One more time, same thing. New York Times, Thursday, January 28th, 2020. Outbreak rattles markets, spurring downturn fears, by Matt Phillips and Katie Robinson. Will that help Kyle Bass? Will that help Robert Mercer? Will it help Steve Bannon? Monday, February 3rd, 2020. New York Times, front page, Peter S. Goodman. Trade networks face new menace in coronavirus. Again, is somebody shorting this? Now, note today's New York Times. Page 810 by Simon Marks and Abdi Latif Dahir. Africa, with growing ties to China, is especially vulnerable, meaning to the virus. On the inside, in the business page, note the following by Anna Swanson. U.S. plans trade talks with Kenya to counter China's influence in Africa. The virus may help that as well. Now, note the following, too, right beside the article about how vulnerable Africa is to this. Tests to start in Wuhan on medicine made in U.S. On Thursday, China began enrolling patients in a clinical trial of remdesivir, an antiviral medicine made by Gilead, the American pharmaceutical giant. That does not include the drug cocktail that was successful in Thailand, which cures it successfully treats this. A 71-year-old woman treated with that drug cocktail. I don't have the things in front of me. Plus, got to get ready for Maybelline to take over for me here. This is a live broadcast. If, for example, you knew in advance this was going to happen, you could make a whole lot of money if you happen to invest in Gilead if they get the contracts. Again, the economics here is very interesting. Remember Tommy Hicks and the 5G initiative? Same day, today, Friday, February 7th of 2020, China's command of 5G is a danger, Barr says. That's Attorney General William Barr. This by Katie Benner. William Barr has a background in the CIA, and he pardoned the Iran-Contra people. We'll talk more about the Psy War and weaponized media in our next show, but note the following as something of a teaser. Friday, January 31st of 2020. Virus fuels anti-Chinese sentiment overseas by Motoko Rich. At a time when China's rise as a global economic and military power has unsettled neighbors in Asia as well as its rivals in the West, the coronavirus is feeding into latent bigotry against the people of mainland China. A French publication, by the way, referred to the yellow flu. And note, as we wrap things up here, I talked about weaponized media. We'll get into this in our next show. New York Times, publisher of the Warren Report, and we'll talk about its links to the CIA, is the CIA's number one propaganda asset. Now, notice the weaponized verbiage. Wednesday, January 29th, New York Times, front page by Austin Ramsey, R-A-M-Z-Y. Virus puts a fractured Hong Kong on edge. First paragraph, the lead. You talk about burying the lead. Here's a burying lead. The two Hong Kong protesters were dressed head to toe in black, their faces covered in masks. They smashed their Molotov cocktails into the lobby of a public housing estate, and flames and smoke began spewing out. Well, if you're passing out leaflets, chanting, holding a placard, you're a protester. If you're dressed in black with a mask on, throwing Molotov cocktails into the lobby of the building, you are a terrorist. That began the last 12 or 13 minutes from, for the record, 11-12 from February 7th of 2020. Now, in addition to J. Kyle Bass and his position betting that the Chinese economy will tank, again, he is poised for his investments to be asymmetric to the Hong Kong and Chinese economies. That means basically if they go down, he goes up. Reviewing now, not only the depth of the anti-China sentiment in Washington, but also Steve Bannon's central position in it from the New York Times of July 20th of 2019. A New Red Scare is Reshaping Washington by Anna Swanson reads in part, in the ballroom across from the Capitol building, an unlikely group of military hawks, populist crusaders, Chinese, Muslim, freedom fighters, i.e. Uyghurs, associated with the Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, and the Islamic State, and followers, that's my interjection, and followers of the Falun Gong have been meeting to warn, actually beginning again, in a ballroom across from the Capitol building, an unlikely group of military hawks, populist crusaders, Chinese, Muslim, freedom fighters, and followers of the Falun Gong has been meeting to warn anyone who will listen that China poses an existential threat to the U.S. that will not end until the Communist Party is overthrown. If the warnings sound straight out of the Cold War, they are. The Committee on the Present Danger, a long-defunct group that campaigned against the dangers of the Soviet Union in the 1970s and 1980s, has recently been revived with the help of Stephen K. Bannon, the president's former chief strategist, to warn against the dangers of China. Once dismissed as xenophobes and fringe elements, the group's members are finding their views increasingly embraced in President Trump's Washington, where skepticism and mistrust of China have taken hold. That last sentence repeating, once dismissed as xenophobes and fringe elements, the group's members are finding their views increasingly embraced in President Trump's Washington, where skepticism and mistrust of China have taken hold. Fear of China has spread across the government from the White House to Congress to federal agencies, where Beijing's rise is unquestioningly viewed as an economic and national security threat and the defining challenge of the 21st century. Quote, these are two systems that are incompatible, unquote, Mr. Bannon said of the U.S. and China. Quote, one side is going to win and one side is going to lose. And that zero-sum game, I think, is exactly what is going on. Now, we're going to talk about the weaponization of the media, things relevant to some of the discussion we had, not only in connection with the Arab Spring back in 2010, but also our series on the landmark book Surveillance Valley, for the record, programs number 1,074 through 1,081. But now, bearing in mind Steve Bannon's central role in the anti-China effort, Bearing in mind Steve Bannon's ties to Guo Wangui and to J. Kyle Bass, who is betting against the Chinese economy, as he did in 2008 when he had a bunch of default credit swaps that made him tons of money. Basically, J. Kyle Bass got rich off of everyone else's misfortune in 2008. One should note also that Tommy Hicks is very close to and probably invested with J. Kyle Bass, and Tommy Hicks is not only part of the anti-China effort, but has high-level access to national security and to the Department of Commerce, more about that later, and to other government agencies and the Trump White House with regard to the 5G initiative. That has been a major focal point of U.S. diplomacy and military maneuvering and economic maneuvering as well. But now, back to Steve Bannon and back to cynical investing, or apparently cynical investing, with regard to the anti-China effort and the coronavirus outbreak. Reviewing again the relationship, or really the position, of Steve Bannon's financial angel, Robert Mercer. Bannon and Mercer and his daughter, Rebecca Mercer, were the driving forces, along with Palantir and the company SCL, in the Cambridge Analytica gambit that we have spoken about in, among other programs, For the Record 946 and For the Record 1077. Robert Mercer has made his money with an AI-driven investment firm called Renaissance Technologies, which has developed a 70% return on investments, a record. Reviewing from the book, it came from Something Awful, How a Toxic Troll Army Accidentally Memed Donald Trump into Office by Dale Barron, published in hardcover by All Points Books, about Robert Mercer and Renaissance Technologies, bearing in mind that Robert Mercer is the financial angel behind Steve Bannon and Cambridge Analytica and Breitbart as well. Now, of Renaissance Technologies. In the 1970s, Mercer programmed machine learning artificial intelligences to process vast sets of data, and so predict what was supposed to be the central mystery of capitalism, the movement of markets. And well, they did and still do. The hedge fund for which Mercer worked, Renaissance Technologies, has earned an average of 70% each year, making Mercer one of the richest men on the planet. I would note, in that regard, that one should consider, and I will supplement some of the discussion, the tremendous effect the coronavirus is having on the global economy. Anyone who saw that coming, and insider tips, if, as I suspect, this is BW, would be a tremendous boon in making a lot of money. You could short positions, in other words, you could buy stock and then on credit and then repay it when the value of that stock had declined enormously and make a lot of money. That is short selling. Or you could invest in such a way as to profit from things that would prove profitable. One of the things I found curious, sort of along the lines of the Sherlock Holmes observation about the dog that didn't bark, there was an article carried both by Reuters and by Agence France-Presse, two major wire services, that doctors in Thailand had apparently successfully treated, among others, not only other coronavirus victims or patients, but a 71-year-old woman from China that had been successfully treated by a drug cocktail involving antivirals commonly used to treat the flu and others used to treat HIV. I'm not in the position to make a clinical/scientific analysis of that, but given the orgiastic journalistic coverage, which is frankly weaponized journalism, altogether alarmist and panicked in its context. I found it curious that something that important, potentially, basically a relatively mild, relatively mundane cure for this virus, went unmentioned. The lack of discussion of that, you know, again, Agence France-Presse, the Reuters wire service mentioned it. It has gone, at least so far, blacked out by major American media. I haven't checked lately, but there was no discussion of this. There has, however, been some discussion in the American media of another apparently successful treatment, again, yet to be fully developed, and I cannot make a clinical evaluation of this, but that is another antiviral called Remdesivir, R-E-M-D-E-S-I-V-I-R. China has been testing that. It is made by an American pharmaceutical giant named Gilead, and they have applied for a patent for the use of that experimental U.S. viral drug. Now, about Remdesivir and Gilead. From the New York Times of February 6th of 2020 by Denise Gravy, G-R-A-V-Y, China begins testing an antiviral drug in coronavirus patients, unquote. On Thursday, China began enrolling patients in a clinical trial of Remdesivir, an antiviral medicine made by Gilead, the American pharmaceutical giant. The drug has to be given intravenously, is experimental, and not yet approved for any use and has not been studied in patients with any coronavirus disease. But studies of infected mice and monkeys have suggested that Remdesivir can fight coronaviruses. Skipping down. Doctors in Washington State gave Remdesivir to the first coronavirus patient in the U.S. last week after his condition worsened and pneumonia developed when he'd been in the hospital for a week. His symptoms improved the next day, which is a good thing. The New York Times of the previous day, February 5th of 2020, a Reuters story, China lab seeks patent on use of Gilead's coronavirus treatment. It reads in part, a state-run Chinese research institute has applied for a patent on the use of Gilead Sciences' experimental U.S. antiviral drug, which scientists think could provide treatment for the coronavirus that has killed hundreds and infected thousands. The Wuhan Institute of Virology of the China Academy of Sciences, based in the city where the outbreak is believed to have originated, said in a statement on Tuesday it applied to patent the use of Remdesivir, an antiviral drug developed by Gilead to treat the virus. Quote, even if the Wuhan Institute's application gets authorized, the role is very limited because Gilead still owns the fundamental patent of the drug, unquote, said Zhao Yubin, a Shanghai-based intellectual property consultant at Purple Vine IP Service Company. Note now, Gilead Science, and I have, obviously, I cannot make an evaluation of the relative utility of Remdesivir. I do know that there has been, the New York Times has not, as far as I can tell, or any other major American media voice, reported on the Thailand studies of that drug cocktail of antivirals used to treat the flu and HIV. It has been reported, by, again, by Agence France-Presse, Reuters, and some British papers, but nothing so far that I can tell in any major American media voice. I would note the following from the Little Sis blog of May 24th of 2017. This is by Rob Galbraith. Mercer Family Front Groups a packed universal health care bill in New York State. What it talks about is the Mercer Hedge Fund Renaissance Technology. And bear in mind Steve Bannon's central position in the anti-China fever that has taken hold of the U.S. and also, by the way, has a strong racist, xenophobic component. I'll get to that later. But note some of the major holdings of Renaissance Technology. Renaissance Technology's top 15 holdings, this will be as of May of 2017, also includes 16.4 million shares of the medical device manufacturer Novo Nordisk, valued at $563 million, 7.7 million shares of Gilead Pharmaceuticals, valued at $523 million. I don't know what has happened to Gilead's stock, but very often equities are subject to not only mercurial changes and computerized trading has much to do with that. Rumors can help a lot, or credible sourced stories. Given the enormous size of the Chinese market, 1.4 billion people, and given the worldwide and, as we will see, frankly, alarmist scope of the coronavirus phenomenon. And again, I think we're looking at weaponized media, very possibly weaponized online media. The profits to be made potentially by Gilead Pharmaceuticals would be enormous if this drug, and China has applied for a patent on this, if this becomes the go-to pharmaceutical treatment, so to speak, for the coronavirus, Gilead Pharmaceuticals is going to make one hell of a lot of money. China's a huge market, and it will be used around the world in all probability. So, bear in mind the remarkable skill by the brilliant Robert Mercer. He is a brilliant investor. He's also, unfortunately, an SOB of the first order. But he is the financial angel of Steve Bannon. Bannon is also tied to people spreading rumors about China's army having deliberately spread the coronavirus or accidentally spread it. And Kyle Bass, associated with Bannon, and Tommy Hicks are betting Kyle Bass is positioned to benefit from the downturn in the Chinese economy, much as he made his fortune betting against the housing market prior to the 2008 crash. It will be interesting to see to what extent Renaissance Technologies, Robert Mercer, and by extension perhaps Steve Bannon, profit from Gilead Pharmaceuticals. Again, 7.7 million shares. I don't know what has happened to its stock. If it's gone up, we may find that Renaissance Technology has sold much of their stock and made a whole lot of money. Much of that, some of it may find its way into Steve Bannon's undertakings as well. There is no way of knowing. Well, I guess one could if you had the right computer tools and wanted were in a position to take the time to parse Renaissance Technologies investments. It would be interesting to see how they have done relative to the Chinese downturn, because that downturn has affected many, many parts of the global economy. There has been a lot of coverage of that since. But note, again, I have no idea whether Renaissance Technology has shorted stocks, but they are heavily invested in Gilead Pharmaceuticals, and there has been not only coverage, but an application by China for a patent on their remdesivir experimental antiviral medicine. If that winds up being fulfilled, if that becomes the go-to treatment, that is going to make a lot of money for Gilead Pharmaceuticals and for Robert Mercer, Steve Bannon's financial angel. Something that I want to go back and cover, and this will probably require a couple of programs, at least one more, maybe two more, but the weaponized coverage of what we are seeing. And we note that as of today, this morning's papers, they're talking about a huge spike in cases. There are something like 46,000, maybe 50,000 cases reported in China, with between 1,300 and 1,400 deaths. And this is being, oh my God, what a huge phenomenon. There is certainly a lockdown in China, which is affecting its economy in a big way and agitating its people. There have been reports that, the disinformation machine online is cranked up naturally. All sorts of crackpots, Alex Jones et al., are reporting things that are a mix of truth and a mix of utter fresh fertilizer. There is a report now being, of course, dissed by the Atlantic Council, predictably coming out of Russia, that in fact, they are blaming the U.S. for the coronavirus outbreak. I suspect that is accurate. The timing, not only does this come in the middle of a verified anti-China destabilization effort, but the outbreak immediately prior to and overlapping China's biggest holiday, their Lunar New Year, which Chinese not only celebrate but travel, is a potent psychological warfare weapon. But note that in a country a little less than five times the size of the U.S., with maybe some 50,000 cases reported and 1,300 to 1,400 deaths. We're going to revisit in its entirety an article, one of the relatively few items of sanity in the New York Times coverage of this, which has been completely over the top. If you read the New York Times or follow it, every day there have been maybe at least two, often sometimes four or five pages devoted to the coronavirus outbreak and basically sounding the same thing. One, China is a basket case. The Chinese government is terrible. The health care system is terrible. It's ravaging China. And certainly there has been a lot of online dissatisfaction by people in China. How much of that may be gamed by elements in this country. We'll talk about the capability of the CIA's cyber weapons to imitate Chinese cyber activity. But the coverage by the New York Times and other media outlets has been absolutely over the top. And not only have the stories been uniformly anti-China and feeding into xenophobia by and large, but very repetitive. As you heard in the excerpt from our previous program, there's just been story after story after story, panicking the markets, doing this, doing that. And sometimes very interesting juxtapositions from the same edition. Last Friday, for example, we have coverage in the front section of the New York Times about how Africa was particularly vulnerable to the coronavirus. Then on the inside, the Trump administration is making a trade overture to Kenya to counteract Chinese influence in Africa.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
We will get to an article. This column that I'm going to reread talks about the American flu season of 2017 to 2018 and talks about an estimated 61,000 Americans killed by the flu in 2017-2018. As we will see, the CDC said that 80,000 Americans died in that flu season, the winter of 2017 to 2018. And maybe 1,300 so far have died of the virus in China. There has also been a great deal of alarmist coverage of the 2003 SARS outbreak as well. It killed maybe, depending what you'll see, as few as 300 deaths, sometimes 800. It turned out that SARS, which is an upper respiratory infection, can be treated the same way you would treat the flu or the cold. Take plenty of rest, drink plenty of fluids, take plenty of vitamin C, drink ginger ale. I remember when your mom used to give you ginger ale when you were a kid and you had a cold. Well, ginger is an anti-inflammatory. And if you have an infection, take any anti-inflammatory that is safe, and ginger is certainly safe. And ginger ale is tasty. A good thing to give a kid has ginger in it is a good thing. But listen to the following. And among the businesses that have been damaged by the coronavirus is the travel industry. And as we noted in an article in that we read into the record in 11-12, repeated in the first part of this program, China has now been effectively cut off from the U.S., its largest trading partner, as well as many other countries. But now listen to the following. New York Times from last Friday. I read part of this into the record last week. And the op-ed column by Rosie Spinks, a global tourism reporter for Skift, a travel industry news and research company. Rosie Spinks, who says visiting China isn't safe? The coronavirus outbreak seems defined by two opposing forces. The astonishing efficiency with which the travel industry connects the world, and a political moment dominated by xenophobic rhetoric and the building of walls. Respiratory infections, however, know no borders. The virus has spread regardless of extreme measures taken by governments, which include canceling flights, closing borders, and issuing travel advisories usually reserved for conflict zones. Time and time again, destinations perceived as, quote, Western, unquote, benefit from a kind of cultural familiarity and presumption of safety that so-called foreign or exotic places do not. When we, as travelers, decide what places are too unsafe to travel, those decisions are determined not just by actual conditions on the ground, but also by perceptions shaped by the media, the travel industry, and the foreign offices of governments, all subtly informed by the same power structures that underlie much unfairness in the world. Public health experts do, on rare occasions, recommend closing off travel to and from a country because of an epidemic. But in this case, the World Health Organization explicitly did not advise that any restriction of trade or travel was necessary when it declared a public health emergency of international concern last week, and it still doesn't. Instead, it has called for exit screening in international airports and domestic hubs in China. The United States State Department, nevertheless, is denying entry to foreigners who have recently been to China and is screening Americans who arrive home from China, as well as asking them to self-quarantine for 14 days. It has told Americans not to visit the country at all. British Airways, Lufthansa, and all three major American carriers have halted all flights to China, while the cruise line Royal Caribbean is denying boarding to any person who has traveled to, from, or through China or Hong Kong in the past 15 days. Travel companies are motivated both by pressure from employees and by the falling demand for flights. Flying empty planes to China is, after all, not profitable. But what has motivated the response from governments? It doesn't appear to be evidence, measures like screening at airports, quarantining cruise ships or flights with confirmed cases, and isolating communities at the center of an outbreak can be effective, said Aaron Sorrell, S-O-R-R-E-L-L, an assistant research professor at Georgetown University who studies emerging infectious diseases. However, she and other experts say the available evidence suggests that border shutdowns are not an effective way to contain respiratory viruses. Resources are better used, she argued, treating sick patients and developing vaccines. Sadly, one doesn't have to look far for evidence of these top-down decisions morphing into outright racism, a trend that has a long history. Coronavirus shares something in common with other kinds of civil disruption, natural disasters, or emergencies that affect travel. One more time. Coronavirus shares something in common with other kinds of civil disruption, natural disasters, or emergencies that affect travel. Its destructive power lies not in the actual risk, but in the perception of that risk. Scientists have said that the majority of people who contract coronavirus will experience it as a respiratory infection they will fully recover from. One more time, because again, this Chicken Little, the sky is falling coverage, and I think it is weaponized and may very well result from that, from press briefing that Dr. Merkel suggests arose from that exercise in December of 2019 in New York City, which talked about a lethal worldwide coronavirus outbreak of the type of virus that caused SARS. More about that later. Its destructive power lies, talking about the emergency, not in the actual risk, but in the perception of that risk. Note again, its destructive power lies, because this is really important, its destructive power lies not in the actual risk, but in the perception of that risk. Scientists have said that the majority of people who contract coronavirus will experience it as a respiratory infection that they will fully recover from. But the extreme reactions, the canceling of flights, closing of borders, and level 4 travel warnings seem more appropriate for something much worse. Therein lies a familiar unfairness. When it comes to travel, risk is rarely assessed objectively. Consider the level 2 warning, level 4 for coronavirus. Consider the level 2 travel warning from the State Department last month in the wake of the Australian wildfires. It advised travelers to consider postponing their trips to Australia because of extremely poor air quality and the threat of evacuation. Just a few days later, it was reduced to level 1 after Prime Minister Scott Morrison appealed to the Trump administration. Note the following. Similarly, in the 2017-18 flu season, when the U.S. had a particularly bad outbreak, the respiratory virus resulted in an estimated 61,000 deaths and 45 million symptomatic cases, but European nations didn't issue any travel warnings at all. Note that 61,000 deaths. The CDC, as we will see, said 80,000. 45 million infected. That's out of a population of a little over 300 million. 61, CDC says 80,000 deaths. China's almost 5 times the size of the U.S. So far, roughly maybe 50,000 people infected, 1,300 plus dead. It is minuscule compared with this. And the coronavirus, again, is an upper respiratory infection that most people will recover from. The people, by the way, who have been dying of this are mostly elderly people with compromised immune systems, either chronically ill and or with other illnesses. Continuing, coronavirus is different from other tourism disruptions in a significant way. The potential loss of tourism revenue will hurt not only China, but also other countries. In the decade and a half since the SARS crisis, the number of Chinese travelers has soared, with China surpassing all other nations in its volume of outbound travelers starting in 2012. In 2017, the Chinese made more than 143 million trips abroad. My colleagues at Skift Research predict that in 2029, that figure will be 286 million. Luxury retailers all over the world rely on Chinese travelers, and destinations develop sophisticated marketing strategies to cater to them. The world often thinks of travel and tourism as being a collection of different industries operating separately, yet alongside one another. But in reality, it's a web of economically interconnected parts. While it is subject to the political environment it operates in, it also has a chance to stand up to the political norms of the day, especially when policy goes against best practices recommended by international agencies. With the rhetoric surrounding coronavirus, however, it appears that the astonishing growth of the Chinese travel market in the past 15 years did little to rid the industry of the impulse to treat Chinese travelers as others, unquote, in the face of doubt and uncertainty. Canceling flights and cruises and locking down borders when it's not advised by international agencies will be not only an act of economic self-harm, but also a wasted opportunity to learn from the mistakes of the past. And very quickly, about the xenophobia. We'll continue with our discussion of weaponized media. There have been reports, again, the Russians and others, that the People's Liberation Army had made the assertion that the coronavirus was a USBW program. I suspect, or a weapon, I suspect that's the case from the timing, the fact, a number of things, the testing of these kinds of viruses, a moratorium on it was lifted at the end of 2017. Actually, before we'll get into this in our next program, but I want to note the following, because it follows on the discussion that Ms. Spinks engaged in there. From the Stat News blog of September 26th of 2018, CDC, 80,000 people died of flu last winter, highest death toll in 40 years. An estimated 80,000 Americans died of flu and its complications last winter, the disease's highest death toll in at least four decades. The director for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Robert Redfield, revealed the total in an interview Tuesday night with the Associated Press. Again, 45 million got it. 80,000, according to the CDC, died. And yet, you didn't hear this constant alarm about, my God, you know, what is going on? People weren't, there was no travel restriction or anything else. Compare that, the number of dead in the country, roughly a fifth the size of China, was roughly 60% higher than the number of people so far who have been reported as taken ill. That contrasts with 1,300 or 1,400 Chinese died so far. Again, mostly older people with chronic, either chronically ill and or with other infections, people with compromised immune systems. Those are the kinds of people who succumb to the flu as well. More about this, however, in our next program. This concludes for the record, program number 1113, The Chinese Winter, weaponized media, social media, and the coronavirus biowarfare psyop. This is being recorded on February 13th of 2020. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.